the way you look at life changes, the way you think about it changes, and you just don't want to be focused on all that negativity. You know, like for me, that level of stress that I had was so high. And now I get really fussy when I get stressed. I don't like that feeling at all. Yet that was like home base for me. So your tolerance for stress goes down the healthier you are. So when people are working all the time and they're kind of that, have that type A, you know, mentality where they're driven and working and stressed.
Hej och välkommen. Du lyssnar på Human Change med mig, Daniel Magnusson. And I will switch to English because today I have Christine Heath with me, who is a very experienced therapist and also coach and working with the three principles a long time. And a podcast host also. That's where I actually heard Christine for the first time that I am aware of. I probably heard her in another podcast, but the first time with her friend Judith Sedgman, and the podcast is called Psychology Has It Backwards, and really, really good. So I can really recommend that podcast, and I will definitely put up a link to it in the podcast description. So welcome, Christine. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm always thrilled to talk with the Swedes because I'm Swedish, actually. My grandmother's last name was Tulin.
Aha, uh-huh. Tulin.
And so, yes, I'm a Minnesota Swede.
Ah, that's good. Good to know. I didn't know that. Yeah. But do you speak any Swedish words?
Yeah, sure. You betcha. That's as much as we get.
Next question.
Nope, I don't. I've never been to Sweden. It was on my things to do when the pandemic hit. Ah. So it's still lurking out there.
Yeah. Who knows? Tell me when you come.
I will.
Yeah. And if you would come to Sweden, it's going to be quite a long trip because now you live in Hawaii.
I live in Hawaii, yes. Yeah. It's the most remote place on the planet. So we're a long ways from everybody. Yeah. But especially from Sweden, like you are actually on the other side of the world from
me. Yeah. 11 hours time difference at the moment. So yeah, definitely. Usually it's 12 when we have, like, as we say here in Sweden, summertime. We change the clock. We call it summertime. So anyway, but now it's winter time here and you have winter time also, but probably a nicer winter time than we have here in Sweden. So
it's still in the 70s here, so we're doing pretty good.
Ah, that's nice.
70 Fahrenheit, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you, what was your background? You worked as a therapist and
something changed. I kind of backed into being a therapist back in the 70s when therapy was really starting to even start in general. It was wasn't the same career as we have now. So at the time I went in to try and really wanted to help people. And so I went into counseling and I started, I met these women in a group and they were working with women, children, actually adolescents who had been sexually traumatized in their families. So they were victims of incest and they didn't have anybody, no one had ever done anything about that. And no one had ever provided any services and nobody wanted to. And so I said, oh, I'll do it. So I started my career working with some of the most abusive families around and kind of cutting edge work at that time because no one else was doing the work. So I started off And then I also started working with a shelter for battered women. I set up one of the first shelters for battered women and did a lot of work with domestic violence and child abuse and people who had been traumatized when they were children, as well as whole families where there was current abuse happening. So I was, after about 6 years of doing that, in traditional therapy and traditional psychology, I was really burned out mm-hmm. because there was so mm-hmm. much negativity and so much trauma and so much evil things that people did to each other that it was my way of dealing with them was really to kind of connect with them on a level of what I call pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. So I became really burned out. I was very unhappy. I wasn't sleeping well. I had eczema on my skin. I had all kinds of sleep problems because I was so stressed out and distressed. And I also was working. There was such a big need that I was working hours and hours and hours. So I was going to get out of the field, actually, because I thought, you know what? I'm doing all this work and I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. My clients aren't happy. They got better, but they weren't happy. They didn't really change in terms of their state of mind. And my colleagues weren't happy. So this didn't look like a very promising career to me. So I thought, this is a bunch of crap is what I thought. I'm going to get out of this field and go do something else because this is not good for me. So I had that much insight. And then as it turned out, I had a colleague, Joseph Bailey, who he and I were in the same building together. And we worked in the same area, actually. We worked in addictions and in with the same kind of populations, but we really didn't like each other. And so we stayed away from each other as much as possible. But as it turned out, he went to this training that Sydney Banks did. And at the training, he met his current wife. So he was really interested in telling me about the woman that he met. So we went out to lunch and he's talking about the woman. And I'm thinking like, oh, that'd be a good way to meet a man. Maybe I could get into this. I was very interested then. And and the other thing that happened was my roommate at the time got referred to him for therapy. And he kept coming home from therapy. And I'd say, well, have you dealt with this yet? And he goes, no, but I feel better. And it was really irritating to me that he was feeling better and yet he wasn't doing the things I thought he should do to process the trauma he went through and all of his problems.
Like going over the trauma and talk about it and try to solve it and understand why it happened, why you felt like you do and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of analyzing why he was the way he was rather than just going to feel better. So, I kind of used that as my excuse to go down and confront Joe about what he was doing. And he got really frustrated with me. He goes, look, if you want to know, we're doing a training, come to the training. I don't want to talk to you anymore. It's like, okay. So I went back to my office and I remember thinking like, well, maybe if I started looking for husbands at psychology conferences, that would be better than bars because I'm not doing very well looking at bars for the love of my life. You know, as that song, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. And that was me, man. I was looking for love in some man and searching. If I could just find somebody who would marry me, then I'd be happy, right? Uh-huh. So, so that was my impetus. I always think that was kind of the hook that I got to go to the conference itself. And I actually signed up. It was a day and a half, and the second day was optional. But I thought, gosh, if I meet a man the first day and I'm not signed up for the second day, and then I sign up because I like him, then it's going to look obvious. So I should just sign up for both days. And you can see how conniving my mind was.
Strategic.
Yeah. And as it turned out, I was the first person to sign up for both days, and it was interesting. So, yeah. So I went to this training and I, was put on by Dr. Roger Mills. And I was the person in the audience that you don't want to have in there. Mm-hmm. So I was arguing with him about, you know, it's true. Women are abused in this world. I mean, how's that a thought? And And, you know, I was kind of really questioning everything he was saying. But he would answer me and I couldn't understand him. So I knew enough not to keep asking the same question because I thought everybody else probably understood him. And it was just me that didn't understand him. So I would let it go and let it go. And then we broke for lunch. And I had a clinic at the time in Minneapolis, and we were all kind of bad mouthing him and thinking this isn't anything new. It's the same thing and blah, blah, blah. And I got up and Roger was leaving the room at the same time. And so he started talking to me. And by this time I knew he was single. So I'm thinking dinner, you know, I wasn't no longer interested in whatever theory he had, but I wanted to be able to converse with him. So I thought I'd better listen. Right. So I went back in the afternoon and I started listening. And it was kind of funny because at the time, being positive in therapy was considered bad therapy. Mm-hmm. That you had to be focused on the pathology of the person and what was wrong and how awful it was that was, you weren't doing a deep therapy if you were focusing on the positive. So he started talking about the positive, I could do positive. That's a possibility. And then we had another break and there was a physician there. And at the time I thought that physicians were kind of one step down from God. So I went to him and I said, well, what do you think about this? And he said, well, I think it makes good common sense. I thought, well, if a doctor thinks this is common sense, maybe I should listen. Mm. So this time I went back and I had really big ears. I was really listening and present because I realized he was talking about something I didn't know. And so I also want to be able to talk about it. So I listened to him and then all of a sudden I had a huge shift and I realized that I'd been looking at life backwards. And that's what I thought at the time. I thought, oh, no wonder I'm having such trouble. I'm doing everything backwards. I'm trying to fix myself after I create this. And then I started laughing because I realized I'd spent like 7 years and $25,000 in therapy trying to analyze myself and analyze what I actually made up. So that was kind of the beginning for me of looking at how my work in psychology and my life actually was backwards, that I was kind of looking at life after the fact of creation instead of seeing how I was creating my experience moment to moment. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge shift for me. And I remember because I felt great. I felt all of a sudden I just dropped into this beautiful feeling and I felt like butterflies were coming out of me. Like I just couldn't stop smiling. And I hadn't smiled in so long, my cheeks hurt because I couldn't stop smiling. So I thought, at that point, I thought, I don't care what this is. If this makes me feel like this, I'm going to be a better therapist. So whatever this is, I'm in. And then the next day, I took him for a tour of Minneapolis. And it was winter, you know, when the snow comes in and the trees are filled with the snow, so they look like they're white. And, you know, winter comes and everything glistens. It was a beautiful morning, sunny morning. And then I realized, I thought, oh, I don't need to be in therapy. There's nothing wrong with me. And then something again shifted and I had a deeper shift and I thought, oh, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. This is going to be my life's work and I'm going to try to bring this into the world and this is going to be my work. So it was kind of like I was changed from within. I didn't really do anything, but I'm really grateful it happened because I probably wouldn't have ever seen anything any other way.
Yeah.
So I was so burned out and I shifted so much over that weekend that people thought I had joined a cult or I was on drugs or I'd met a man. Those were the three options that must have happened to me.
Yeah, because as you say, it's such a big shift and it's when it happens and I heard you, I think you and Judith talked about it in your podcast sometimes also about, and I felt it myself, like, oh, when I will have that big insight. So sometimes it's, we think it's going to be always a big revelation, but it's small nudges sometimes that actually doing the shift. But when we have that insight that actually changed the whole paradigm, how that changes the whole view, how we see, the change or the transformation is instant. And it shows up really, really quick.
Yeah, it's incremental changes, you know. It's like you get a shift, and sometimes some people it's a little shift, sometimes it's a bigger shift. But sometimes people kind of gradually come up, like they're coming up a hill, and then they get a shift. So there's no specific way that it happens. It's different for everybody.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt it in at the time, I thought, oh, I think that the life force needed me to change because I didn't have time to do it the slow way. I had so far to go.
Yeah.
So it kind of felt like I got something, they grabbed onto the collar of my shirt and yanked me up to a higher level of consciousness. Like, no, Chris, up here. Like, oh, hark.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, but everybody's different. And that's, but the thing that's the same is that when you touch that part of your consciousness, something happens and you get a feeling that's really deep. And you know that you've touched a part of you that's not coming from memory. Yeah. You know, it's like, to me, it's like, you know, you touched the spiritual essence of yourself. And when that happens, it's hard to come back from that. It's hard to let that go because you awaken a part of you that you weren't aware of. It's always been there, but you just weren't aware of it. So once you become aware of it, consciousness, like, hey, look at this. It's like, oh yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. And in the same time, when we end up in that state, because it can happen, it doesn't just happen one time and then you never again. But when we come back to it, it's like when we see that and experiencing that, like really experience it and noticing it, for me, it's like, ah, I recognize this. It's not a new place.
Yes. Yeah, there's really a feeling of knowing, isn't there? Like, you know, that space, even though, I mean, like, I can't really say that I remember being in that space, but when you hit it, it doesn't feel unfamiliar. It feels like you're not used to it, maybe sometimes, but it's like when you hit it, that kind of knowing, what Sid Cuck talks about in Second Chance, he talks about knowing with a big K and knowing with a little K, and it's that knowing, and he would say knowing versus knowing. So intellectually knowing versus touching your spirit and awakening to what you really are.
Yeah. So this big shift in you, how did that change your way of working with clients?
You know, it was really a power, because at the time I had a lot of clients, like 65 clients a week, which is a lot.
Wow.
Way more than I should have had.
Yeah. No wonder you were burned out.
yeah, that's right. I had like a lot of groups that I did. So I had way too many clients. And I walked in on Monday and said, okay, you guys, I've always done what I thought was the best in the field. So I went to this training this weekend and I've learned something new, and this is how I'm going to do my work from now on. And they like looked at me, but they all said what they said. I did a videotape of them talking about what it was like to have me the week before and then the week after. And they literally said it was like getting a different therapist. Like, I walked in the room a different person, and they could feel that. They could feel that I wasn't in the same space. And so that got their attention. And most of them said, whatever you're drinking, I'm following you, you know, like whatever, whatever you're doing, I want more of that. Yeah. So I kind of, talked about, you know, I mean, this is like a week, and I didn't even know what I was talking about. So I said, look, this is the best I have. And I did this little diagram that Roger had done. And I said, this is what they're saying is this is a cure to mental illness, is that this is the way out of the trauma that you've gone through, that you're not damaged. You're not stuck with this. You're not destined to have to manage this or deal with it the rest of your life. And I'm sorry I told you that, because I did, you know, I mean, that was the best we could see at the time, that when you've gone through that kind of trauma, that the best you could do is learn how to make it be less impactful on you. And so I was very humble, and then I just talked about what I was seeing and talked about what I could see for myself. And they were like, yeah, I'm in. And I think of those 65 clients, I think two people dropped out, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And a couple of people were going to quit because they weren't getting better, and they stayed. So that in itself was really a powerful experience. I could talk about the little bit that I knew, and people got better. And that week, like, you know, at that time I had so many clients that I couldn't write that many case notes each week. I just couldn't keep up. So I would have them do their own case notes, and then I'd write notes on it. This was back in the day when I could get by with that. But it was interesting because their case notes changed from the week before, talking about how they weren't getting along with their mother and how they had boyfriends that were mistreating them and how they were being abused by their boss at work and how they were kind of living in this world of victimization. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. unhappiness and sadness and a lot of poor self-esteem. And literally the next week, they started talking about having hope and having positive relationships and things going better in their life. It was truly amazing. I wish I'd kept those case notes. I did not. But I wish I had, because it was very dramatic, the difference in terms of what they were writing. Wow. And that was just based on a little pinch of an understanding, but just looking in the other direction, that was so powerful, just to say, you know, like, no, don't look at what happened that was bad. Let's look at how you can be healthy now.
Yeah.
That this is just something that happened to you. It cannot damage you on a spiritual level. You can't be damaged.
Yeah.
And that was really the most powerful thing.
Yeah, and it's not about neglecting or like try to push away and not seeing what have happened, because what have happened has happened, but you don't need to like dwell in it. like it's very common, of course.
Yeah, like I mean, bad things happen in life. You know, it's like the level of consciousness of the world is very low. Human beings do things to the planet, to each other, to people they love, to people they hate, that are very dysfunctional at best, but hurtful and not good. But we experience whatever we experience. And then that becomes a memory, becomes a thought. And that's what we carry through time, is that memory. And so however we think about the trauma is what makes it impactful with us. So everybody, like people can go through the same trauma. Like we had a hurricane that went through here. And some people were walking up and down the beach going, oh, woe is me. I've lost everything. It's terrible. And other people were saying, like, we've had the best dinners we've had in years because we don't have any screens on and we're just sitting and enjoying each other and having a beautiful experience. So I'm not saying that that would be an option for a trauma, but, you know, it's interesting because what we make of the trauma is kind of what gets us in the end, is how we think about ourselves and how we think about what happened. And when those memories come in, consciousness brings them to life. So there's like a double exposure on your current reality. So understanding how thought works and how innate health works allows people to take the charge off of those memories. So they're not like in Technicolor creating that reality.
Hmm. Yeah. And when I hear Technicolor color, and when people can listen to this and maybe new to it, they may be, oh, so I should change the color. I should make it black and white, like in an LP or something. But that's not what you're saying.
No. You just have to understand that now it's just thought. Hmm. And thoughts are spiritual things. They're not real. They don't have a form. But they're this magical ability that we have to take information. It's like when I first started learning about the cloud, you know, like the cloud held all of this information. And so to me, it's like our little personal mind is a little bit like a computer, and we're hooked up to the cloud where we can store all kinds of memories. Mm-hmm. We can store all of that, but it is just information at that point. Like there's nothing more to it, but consciousness takes the information and then plays a rerun. You know, it just replays the incident. And the more you replay it, the more real it seems. And the more it seems like that incident, that thing that happened, is affecting you now. Mm. So then you want to think about it more. So it becomes like a spiral. Yeah. Where we just keep thinking about it. But understanding that it's just thought kind of allows you to make friends with it in a way where you see that now it's just thought, and whatever the danger was, whatever happened is past. Mm. Otherwise you live as if it's happening now and you start looking for it in your life. So people, you know, that have been through war, I had one guy I worked with couldn't go downtown in Minneapolis because he was afraid there'd be a sniper up on the high tall buildings, right? He was still in the war in Iraq when he was downtown Minneapolis. And so we tend to see in our life whatever's on our mind. And so when we're thinking about that and it's on our mind a lot, we just tend to create a reality that reinforces it.
Yeah, and I think the easiest way for us to maybe recognize that, if we don't have that kind of experience, for example, with that ex-military, is when we can wake up in the morning after a dream that has been really intense, and we feel like, oh my God, oh okay, I'm safe. But it feels like it's real.
Yes. Yes. You know, in fact, I'll tell you a story about that. Because when I was in college, I got assaulted by a burglar in the house that we lived in. And after that, I was terrified to be in a house alone. And so I would always like live with people or live in places where no one could break in that way. Mm-hmm. And I tried to manage it by kind of changing my outside world. And then as I learned the principles, I started realizing like, oh, you got traumatized by that. And that memory keeps every time you're alone, it seems real. And I mean, it would get so real. Like I'd be, you know, in the house and I'd hear somebody outside the window, or I'd hear somebody in the basement or in the attic. And I'd be sure that it was, that there was something happening. I mean, literally I would like see doors move. They weren't, but in my mind, it would create that illusion. And then as I learned the principles, I had less and less impact. I had less and less reaction to it. And the last time I had it was, maybe 20 years ago now. But we had moved into a house in Minneapolis, and it was a fixer-upper house. It was this ranch-style house. It was all one level. And my husband left on a trip, and I had two Pomeranian dogs, and I had two little yippers. And we went to bed, and I was fine, and we were laying in bed. And then all of a sudden, I heard somebody walking upstairs. And I was like, oh, somebody's walking in my house. And my heart started to pound like it was coming out of my chest. I was totally frozen in the bed. It was so real. And I looked down at my two Pomeranians and they were on their back sleeping away, right? And I was like, something like, I looked at that and I went, wait. And then this voice comes in my head and it says, Chris, there's no second floor in this house. Nobody can be walking over your head. And it was like, oh, that's true. I thought, well, what is that noise? And then I realized that what my mind had done is taken the sound of the pulse in my ear and thrown it out. So it made it appear as if it was outside of me. It literally created the fearful situation that I was used to having, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then it was kind of over. Then it was like I was over with that because I was onto myself in a big way. And I was also onto the power of how those memories could look real and could create a sense of reality.
It's an amazing thing that the mind can and the thoughts can create. I mean, the possibility from just creating something from nothing. That's what we do all the time. But also in the physical world, we can actually create something from nothing because it all starts in our mind, in our head, some kind of way.
Yeah. You know, it's I had a woman that called me. She'd been in a in prison in the mainland in the United States, and she had learned the principles there, and she had a long history of addiction and prostitution and all kinds of, I don't even know what she was in prison for, but something. And she learned the principles in prison and she totally transformed her life. She really totally got so much better. And then after she got out, her daughter was murdered and she totally got, you know, very distraught over that and relapsed. And she was in a really bad place. And it was kind of interesting as she told her story, because as that happened, it's almost like she recreated her old world. Not quite as bad. You know, she wasn't in prison. She didn't get in trouble, but she ended up relapsing and doing many of the things she had done to survive at that time. And so something happened in her, though. She said she remembered the principles and that she was okay. And that was like the, you know, the story of the princess and the pea, you know, the children's story where it's like that. That's like that her understanding of the principles was like the pea, and it was bothering her, even though she had layers of thought that she was caught up in. And after a few months, she called 3PGC and said, you know, I need some help. And so we got her help, and it was really interesting because all she had to do was turn herself the other direction again. And then she started to get better. But it was interesting, as soon as she turned back into that insecure thinking, it literally recreated the whole reality. And then as soon as she turned back again to her health, it created a really beautiful experience.
Yeah, it's so, because it's so easy if we don't understand. And in this case, she also understood how it functioned, but it's so easy to get lost because the mind creates a really good reality.
There's layers, isn't there? Yeah. You know, there's just layers of it. So Sid would call those levels of consciousness. And so as we come up, like when I first learned the principles, I was at a very low level of consciousness, and then I had a shift where I came up, but I still wasn't where I needed to be to really maintain it. I mean, I just joined the rest of the human race, I think, and kind of got to normal stress levels, right? Mm-hmm. And then for the last 40 years, I've continued to change and go deeper. And the deeper I go, the simpler it is to me.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the trick is that there's so much to see, is so much beyond what we've even fathomed possible, that we can't really know what we don't know. Yeah. About what's possible. But I know that all of the enlightened people in the face of the earth have all said that there's more than they knew. And I got quite a ways to go before I catch up with them. So I figure I'll be doing this till I die, because there's just more. And it's so exciting. It's like every time you get that shift again, you see something deeper and you see your life in a simpler way and you have a more beautiful feeling. I mean, like who's not to want that?
Exactly. So how could you see back then that psychology had it backwards, that you had it backwards?
Well, what I saw when I had that shift was that it's kind of like all of a sudden I saw that I was focusing on my behaviors. I was focusing on expressing my feelings. I was focusing on trying to fix my outside world. I was trying to find a man to be happy. I was trying to have the right job. I was trying to get people to act certain ways so that I could feel better. And when I saw that was like too late, it was like, oh, no wonder that doesn't work. Because it's like Sidney Banks said, he said, it's like jumping back in the shower to dry off. Mm-hmm. So you create an experience and then you go in and think about it. So it makes it more real. And by shifting that around, like, oh, if we focus on just helping people to see how it works, we don't have to focus on what we create, which is really what psychology does. It looks at people's anxiety, their depression, their addictions, their family relationships, the way that they interact with other people and at work. And it's all trying to manage or fix what's wrong, right? Like to my, and I keep saying this, but I yet have found a university of any kind that has a course on mental well-being, how to notice it, how to understand it, how to use it. We haven't even reached that level yet, but that's really what we need to do, is we have to see what is mental well-being and how can we live there more of the time rather than fixing what's wrong, because it's kind of like you're chasing your tail all the time. You never get to the end of it. You just keep coming up with new things and you end up staying at the same level of awareness or consciousness that you've been living at.
Mm. Yeah. So people who've gone to psychiatrist or maybe therapist and counseling and stuff like that, and then they like get better and feeling good, and has not understand how the mind and consciousness and thought, how that works, what do you think that they have seen, or what is it? Have you experienced that?
Well, I'll tell you, the principles are at work within people all the time.
Yeah.
Innate health is at work within people all the time. So people can get better in spite of the process they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the power of innate health, is that we all have times when we get better. Maintaining that and going deeper are two different things. So people, when like I think that most people's assessment of how much better they get from traditional psychology is slanted by what they think is possible. So like it never occurred to me that therapy would actually make you have, you know, like beautiful feelings coming out of you. I just thought that would help me to solve my problems or live my life. So people's assessment of how much it helps them is limited by what's we know in the world. That's okay. The first thing. Yeah. And the second thing is that if they do find true happiness, if they do find that within them, it'll come from an insight that they get. Like the therapist might say something and off the cuff, they hear it at a deeper level. And they get a shift from that. But it's not going to be coming from focusing on managing their behaviors or changing their thinking. It's just not going to come from that. You get better. I mean, you can, you know, if you change your thinking from negative to positive, you're going to get better. Mm-hmm. But whether that's really living in a deep state of mental health, I think that the field is so un, aware that that even exists, it'd be hard to even measure whether that happens for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And because what I see in my background is traditional, I'm saying traditional coaching, but more about techniques and models and stuff like that. And then I did a little bit of NLP. It's also about like try to repaint the painting that's already painted. Mm-hmm. We're trying to fix the cake when it's already baked. Oh, yeah. It was salt. Okay. Then we try to add more salt to make it more sweet.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's a good analogy. It's a good analogy. We keep going back in the same thing, trying to make it better.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing that it's just doesn't need to be addressed at all.
Yeah.
Like starting over in a sense like that. To me, that was the beautiful thing is, and still is a beautiful thing, that at any moment when we start over, we create something brand new that's way better than remodeling what's the old.
Yeah. Yeah. And also about the future when worried, like, oh, I'm going to do this. And, oh, okay, well, if I play up this scenario of my visualization of what might happen, Mickey Mouse voice and black and white and more speed. And say, well, it's just your thoughts about the future. It's not going to happen. It's not the reality.
That's right. That's right.
But it's very common and it can work in that way you're doing it, but it's not needed.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's to me, one of the kind of the newest insights I've had is that we tend to use our intellect as if it's a source of intelligence, you know, like that. And so that's kind of what most people are trying to figure out what to do to be happy. So we're going into our memory. It's, to me, it's like going to Siri and say, okay, Siri, what do I need to do to be happy? And Siri, if you ask that, Siri says something like, these are the articles on happiness, right? It's mm-hmm. like it just can give you information about it. That's all it can do. It can't really give you insight. And insight is what creates a shift in a human being. Insight is what creates awareness of the potential that we have to live in a different state of mind, in a different reality. That's a different kind of change than traditional change. See, traditional change takes a person at whatever level of consciousness they're at and then tries to change their thinking and their behaviors and the way they express their feelings and what they do in their life. But it's all based on the same level that they are living at. So it's difficult. Because as long as you're in a good place, in a good, pretty good state of mind, you're okay. But as soon as your mood drops, boom, you're back to your old habits again. Mm-hmm. So people get then discouraged and they get hopeless because they keep doing the same thing over and over. That's why Einstein said that problems of the world will never change as long as they're being tried to solve them at the same level that they're created. So if we're creating a problem at a given level of consciousness, we have to change our level of understanding or level of consciousness to see it differently, to fix it. Otherwise, we're using the same thinking that's creating it.
Mm. Yeah.
So we just get stuck there. So this kind of therapy is looking at changing the level of consciousness that a person is living at rather than changing the details of their life. And when a person does that, the details of their life change automatically.
Yeah.
They change automatically. If you go back down to a low level of consciousness, changes back again, you know, that's just how it works.
Yeah.
And so if you see that that's what's going on, then all you got to do is point yourself in the direction of a beautiful feeling and see and learn for yourself how your thinking tricks you from living there.
Yeah.
Creates an illusion that you should be serious about life or you should be fixing life or you should be fixing yourself.
Yeah, it's so simple. but it doesn't mean it's easy, but definitely just to be open and look in the direction of what feels right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, to me, it's like when you understand that you're connected up with this greater wisdom. I mean, that's kind of the other thing that happened when I had that first insight, is that I realized I was part of something greater than me, that there was an intelligence that I was a part of, and that was really what I needed to listen to get out of my circumstances, mm-hmm. right? Like trusting myself was not working, had not worked up to that point. And I knew that was clear, but I just didn't see that I was a part of that energy and I had the answers inside of me. I thought that I needed to be thinking about everything all the time and figuring it out. And then I didn't do such a good job. And so I'd like, oh my God, I can't trust myself. Look what I did now. You know, it's like you just get thinking. And so the more you trust that you have like a direct line to a higher intelligence, but it doesn't go through your memory, that you're a lot safer, because the intelligence that comes through you is what allows you to look at the thoughts you have and decide whether they're worthwhile or not. Mm. But when you don't know that, whatever thoughts come in your head look like, you know, this is God speaking. This is the truth about you or the truth about your life or whatever.
Yeah. And just to see that this system is constant and it's the same for everybody.
Yes. Yeah, nobody's special.
No, exactly. And that the same way that like the tree's vascular system works in the same way, we have the body's vascular system works the same way. Then if you have implication, that's another thing, but it's supposed to work the same way. It's still then. Same with the psychological system is also, it's a constant, it's an intelligent system.
Yeah. And if you take care of yourself, it'll work for you and you'll have a nice life. Yeah. If you contaminate it by, you know, it's like if you eat a lot of garbage, you're probably going to have illness in your body.
Yeah.
But if you take care of yourself, I mean, eventually you're going to die. So sooner or later you wear out. But if you really pay attention to just trying to live in a beautiful feeling, then the way you look at life changes, the way you think about it changes, and you just don't want to be focused on all that negativity. Mm. You don't, like for me, that level of stress that I had was so high. And now I get really fussy when I get stressed. I don't like that feeling at all. Yet that was like home base for me. Mm. So your tolerance for stress goes down the healthier you are.
Yeah.
So when people are working all the time and they're kind of that, have that type A, you know, mentality where they're driven and working and stressed, that just is, that's just the reality they're creating. So when you slow down, it's like, oh gosh, that doesn't feel so good anymore.
Yeah. Because you're noticing the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people are talking, oh, is it positive stress and negative stress? And I always say, yeah, stress is stress. You have the same stress response in your body. Mm-hmm. But when people are talking about positive stress, when I ask more, it's actually not stress. It's more about being in the flow, being in your well-being.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? That's really interesting how that our focus on the negative, on stress, now then gets kind of used as a way to describe a good experience.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh. So, and that was, I took a note on that, because just the stress tolerance goes down the more healthy you are, because we notice when it's a bad feeling. I get more aware of it. I might mention it in a before in the podcast, but not in this episode. But like a 1 month ago, I was supposed to have a training, and I was like, yeah, I know this training, but I was, felt not really prepared. And I was standing this morning, not this morning, but that morning, and I was on the toilet before, and I was like, oh, probably a third time I went to the toilet because the stress. And then it's like, oh, I'm standing here. I kind of have a lukewarm water when I'm washing my hands, but if it's really hot, my fingers are cold. Okay. And I felt, my leg muscles was definitely warmer. So a lot of blood flushed to my thighs and I lost it in my fingers. Okay. I'm stressing now. I'm having a stressing experience. I'm thinking something. Okay. And then suddenly that just made me aware of it. And then I could let go of it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, to me, it's like we are such a incredible creation, you know, that our feelings are there to alert us to the functioning that we're doing, not to the functioning of our life, right? Yeah. And so when you get that turned around and you start to see that that's what's going on is just your body doing its thing, alerting you to what's happening and what's happening in your mind. It's like such a relief to learn that. Yeah,
definitely.
But it's also amazing, really. It's taken us this long to figure out that feelings are there to tell us that there's something going on with our thinking, not something going on with our life.
Yeah.
And most of the world doesn't even see that yet.
No, exactly. And when I talked to with Yo, we talked about it, and the more people actually getting aware of and understanding how we function, it shifts, and that also make an effect in other people's lives because we show up in a different kind of way, and that people will, as in your case, what are you drinking? Are you on drugs or have you met a man?
Right.
When you actually fall back to your innate well-being.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny thing when you tap into that space in you. It's like a river. It starts coming out of you. And then the tributaries start touching other people. Mm. And they get a better feeling. And then they wake up. And then it kind of goes like that. It's very, very interesting. And you can tell... Like for me, I can tell when I'm in it, that'll happen. Like people like say, oh, I really got something out of this, Chris, or I really got an insight about this, or this really changed my life or something. And when I'm not, I'm saying the same thing, but nothing's happening, right? It's like that feeling isn't coming through me and doing it. Yeah. And that's where the power is. It's not in changing the world, it's changing our relationship with the world by connecting to the inner world.
Yeah.
And then the outer world changes, right? Sid used to say that. He said, the inside always creates the outside.
Yeah.
So when we change on the inside, and then because we're all the same, we're like, it's kind of like, you know, when you have the lights that are all on the same, like Christmas lights are all on the same line, you know, it's like, everybody else starts to light up too, because you're walking around in this beautiful feeling that's in everybody.
Yeah.
It's not special to you. It's just, you get to see it. And the more appreciative we are of there, the more intentional, I think we have, the more awareness we have, the more intentional we are to live there. Like, I don't want to do things now that I get stressed out about. It's not on my list of top things to do. But in the past, I might have done them because I thought I needed to, or because it was an important thing or something. But now it's like, oh, no, that's going the wrong direction. I can feel that I'm going the wrong direction in life.
Very, very, very important to have that in mind and stop and reflect on it when it comes up, and like trust ourselves. Should I go or should I not go in this direction? So, Chris, thank you very, very much for today's conversation. I really loved it. So if somebody would like to come in contact with you, what would be the best way?
You can, well, all of my contact information is on the Three Principles Global Community site, 3pgc.org. Mm-hmm. But my email is Christine J. Heath, christinejheath@gmail.com. You can just send me an email. That's fine. Yeah. We have a website that it's in the process of being redone. So no critics, please. but it's the Hawaii Counseling and Education Center, .com.
Yeah. I will put everything up on the description of the podcast.
Yeah. And if there's any therapists out there that are interested, Judy Sedgman and I are doing a professional training in December online. So we're going to be kind of taking our psychology has it backwards to professional training.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. And I will definitely also link, as I said before, to that website also and that podcast. Mm-hmm. I almost imagine it would be a virtual and online because you live in Hawaii and she's in Pittsburgh or something like that.
It's in Pittsburgh. Yes. It's poor thing. She's got to stay up to like midnight the first night because we start at 5 on Friday, my time. So that's like 10 o'clock her time.
Yeah.
So from 10 to 11:30, we'll start it off and then we'll go from there. But yeah, I think it's going to be fun though. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you very much. And
thank you so much for doing this podcast. And thanks you for inviting me to be part of it. I really appreciate it. It's nice to get to know you.
Yeah, the same. And I wish you a lovely sunny week.
Yeah, it's pretty cloudy today. So we'll see. But we kind of like our cloudy days here because we have more sunny days than cloudy days.
Yeah, and thoughts are just clouds on a sky.
Yeah.
They will
pass.
That's
right.
Thank you.
That's right.
Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Aloha. Tack snälla för att du har lyssnat på den här podcasten. Skulle det vara så att du vill sätta ett betyg för att du lyssnar på iTunes, är du mer än välkommen såklart att gå in och göra det. Sätt det betyg du tycker att den här podcasten förtjänar. Skriv gärna en kommentar. Är det så att du vill komma i kontakt med mig så kan du alltid gå in på humanchange.se eller skicka mig ett mejl på daniel@humanchange.se. Ha det fantastiskt!